Drabblecast Director's Cut, Wonder, by J.R. Hamentation. Drabblecast Director's Cuts are special feature episodes here on the Drabblecast, where in part one we play a previously aired story uncut, and in part two, I sit down with the author and interview him about the story, writing, comedy, biblical plagues of frogs, you name it, while re-listening to the story. Hope you enjoy.
Wonder if you'll think of me when whatever lady you marry tells you she's pregnant. But I know that's unlikely. Honestly, you'd have no reason to think of me then, anyway. Your plate will be full with babies' books and doctor's visits and late-night heart-to-hearts with your bros and confidential talks with yourself in the mirror. You'll be doing a lot to change your ways and to prove to everybody, especially your mother-in-law, that your wife didn't put all her chips on a losing horse. You won't think of me when your baby is finally born, either. No, I don't know what you'll be thinking then. If popular culture is any guide, you won't be thinking anything, except maybe, I'm a father, I'm a father, I can't believe it, but I'm a father. The whirl of the delivery room will grant your inner wish and fall into a state of reverential calm. The doctor's pat on your back will fail to register, and your wife's warm, fatigued smile will go unnoticed, because at that moment in time, it'll be just you and your boy. I'll be the furthest thing from your mind. You won't think of me specifically when you change your baby's diaper, wipe your baby's arse, and feel something inside him scratch back. But we'll be connected in some way, because then you'll get to feel what I'm always feeling, some kind of inarticulate jolting dread in your gut. But your panic, lucky you, will last only for a little bit. Rational minds rationalise, and you no doubt will suppress fears of your baby's health by smothering them with comforting reminders of your overactive imagination and the horrors wrought by your unchecked anxieties. The baby books will have taught you well. But mine's only stretched so far. And I can't tell you exactly what you'll think or how you'll cope when you see formless movement pushing against your baby's diapers like a heavy body groping against blinds. Or what appeasing words you'll offer to your crying baby boy as you hold his hand and as earnestly as you can muster, pray to your God, to anybody, for the bleeding and redolent rotting in his mouth to go away. But soon enough you'll stop worrying about that, because soon enough he'll have no mouth. But I do know how you'll feel when all the doctor's visits fail, and you end up dealing with Frank or Sal or whatever quiet hoodlum in the waste management industry you manage to pay off. You'll beg him, please, 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 to keep his mouth shut. Just take the package and get rid of it. Don't worry, you have his word. He'll take the unmarked cardboard box containing your baby, and hopefully he'll drive fast enough, or be oblivious enough, to make his way to the barge to discard your son before he hears your boy's mewling, gets curious, and discovers something his mind can't undo. I'll empathise with you when you hold your wife at night after you tell her it all went according to plan, that she can stop worrying, that you two can and will move on. I'll empathise with you a little bit, because at least then you'll know loss. You'll know a little bit about pain. And as scared and confused and distraught as you'll be, you'll look into your wife's dinner plate eyes and know you need to stay strong for both of you. But your stoic facade will come to its end soon enough. Desperate hopelessness. That's what you'll feel when you knock on the bathroom door, pleading with your wife to open the door, finally making headway when your fury breaks and you command her to open that fucking door. And there's that rage. You're finally putting it to good use. And to think, you thought it had left you. But we both know that underneath your brashness is gnawing futility, and that's all you'll know when she finally opens the door and lets you in, but turns away from you, too ashamed to let you see her face. But you can see it off the reflection of the mirror. You can't explain it, but her reflection looks too obtuse. It looks like melting. I know you won't be thinking of me then. I can accept that. But I do hope you think of me, somehow, when, in the middle of the night, you open your eyes and see your wife walking on the ceiling like a crab. God, I hope lightning flares and thunder booms right outside your window when you get that first good look at her. You'll subconsciously take note of how long her limbs are and how unstable she seems, how something about her makes you itch and grimace as if you were watching contorting maggots suckling over rotting meat. But somehow, you'll know this is just the natural conclusion to what you set in motion 5 years ago. I pray some dying ember in your brain flares and you somehow think of me. Even when she lands on your stomach, moans a dirge into your ear, and burrows her hungry hands into your face like a dog burying a bone in the backyard. And if you don't think of me, I'll make you. Even as your face and skin and eyes play the part of the doggy's upbended dirt. But even then, I'll keep a little mystery between us. I'll let you wonder, just before your consciousness floats off like a boy letting go of a balloon, why it was, 5 years ago, that even though you had knocked the drink out of my hand, even though you had your friends all laughing at me, even though you were calling me a faggot in front of the whole bar, all I did was smile.
I am here with J.R. Hamantaschen, author of the story you just heard, Wonder, which we ran, 10 years ago in May 2011 on Drabblecast Trifecta 16. You know, we get a lot of weird and disturbing stories sent in, so it's rare that that I really get that wow factor where I'm like, oh my god, that is fucked, because I've seen it all at this point. But this story did it, managed it somehow. I mean, it's one of those stories, and as the listeners just heard, I'm sure that they had that same kind of moment. Where does this fall in the average scope of stories for you? Are they all this dark, or do you have any fluffy light little stories about puppies, or what?
No fluffy and light stories, but I would say this was during a time when I was trying to write flash fiction, which in my most recent collection called You Know It's True, out now, my fourth and last collection, everyone should pick it up. They kind of tend toward the longer, I don't want to say more cerebral because that's not really true and sounds pretentious, but they run longer, whereas this was during my short fiction, flash fiction phase where I was just trying to make a quick, punchy impression.
Yeah.
And it was also the birth of my Hamantaschen nom de plume.
Oh, so, well, it's a story about, to some degree, about birth, you know.
So, I thought you were going to try and say it was somehow a story about baked goods or Hamantaschen. I was going to say, it's quite the stretch.
That would have definitely shocked me a little bit. But, you know, I wasn't anticipating the birth scene where I think one of the most memorable things, even 10 years later, that still pops out to me is that wiping the baby's butt and feeling something clawy down there, you know, something sharp. It's just so disturbing to me to think about that. And
so actually the origins of I wrote the story in basically like an hour. I was living in a dingy part. I don't know if you know Berkeley, California. But I was living on Telegraph Avenue in between a homeless shelter and People's Park, which was like another homeless shelter, basically. And I was walking to, I don't even remember what it was called. I think it was called Yogurt Park or Yogurt Heaven, which was this frozen yogurt place I used to go to a lot. And I kind of remember this individual gave me a very nasty, withering, violence-threatening look. And it really bothered me when I came home. So I wrote an imagined story about some kind of revenge against that person. So it all came pouring out of me.
Yeah.
A dirty look was the origins of the story.
Yeah. I love the craftsmanship in this story where you're kind of wondering what could have happened the whole time to cause this curse. And then obviously at the end, it's, you know, we bring it together with that encounter that he has.
Yeah, a fairly minor overreaction, quite the overreaction, some might say. Perhaps it's been building up upon him, you know. And also, when you have this power, you know, when you got a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. How are you?
I mean, maybe this is just like every single day of his life, just like another hex is coming due.
That's true. Yeah, somebody's late with their order at McDonald's, and they end up having their wife as a crab person crawling across the roof.
I would say actually in my first collection, which is still my most popular one, probably because it's the first one, and it came out a while ago, and it's cheap, and it's got a catchy title, and I like it a lot. But back then, I feel like I was a bit more pretentious with my word choices, although this is one of those stories from the first collection that I feel like works still pretty well. It reads kind of smoothly, and it's not, I'm not trying to impress anybody with my fancy word choices, which is a problem I think I'm ameliorated, ironically using a fancy pretentious word in my later collections. So, but I'm still glad this one works. It's a little a punchy little story, and it's the second story in the first collection, which I put in there just to try and kind of, you know, rope readers in and be like, hey, this guy could write at least something interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you about your titles, because they do, you know, these, as you mentioned, the first one was You Shall Never Know Security, and then you've got, was it the next year or a couple years later, With a Voice That Is Often Still Confused But Is Becoming Ever Louder and Clearer.
Yeah, quite the mouthful. So that was actually, the title of my second collection was originally the title of the last story in that collection, which I then found another title that kind of sums that up, which was something like, it's not... many, I don't even remember. I mean, they're so fucking long, I can't even remember what the titles are. But it was something like, it's not many feelings, it's just one feeling, anxiety. And I was like, oh, that kind of wraps up the last story in my second collection pretty well. But where I found the titles is mainly, I'll just be reading something, and I'll just take a snippet or clause out of context, and I'll be like, hey, that would be kind of a cool title. So I think actually, With a Voice That Is Often Still Confused But Is Becoming Ever Louder and Clearer, it was actually from a letter that Karl Marx was writing to someone else, maybe, about like the proletariat finding their voice or something, like slowly turning in, you know, communism slowly turning the tide. I just thought, hey, taken out of context, that sounds kind of ominous and threatening, you know, so I'll just pilfer that.
It reminds me a little bit of you know, of those types of German words that you see that that really nail specific moods and things that Americans or English doesn't have a word for. It's almost like you're searching for a word that doesn't exist but explains it all. Like your third collection even is a deep horror that was very nearly awe.
You know, yeah, actually, in my second collection, the first story. So I think so. The stories I get, there are certain stories that I think are like, I don't want to say my main stories, like I'm some pretentious asshole, but there are some stories I get most emails about.
Mm-hmm.
And the story I probably get the most emails about is the first story in my second collection. And I can't even pronounce the title, but it was something like Vermachtschlang, which is a German word, which means like the kind of pain of annihilation, which is kind of a word that doesn't exist in the English language. It's kind of like the anxiety of death.
Oh,
so I'm, you know, I'll steal words from other languages if it works. Yeah,
that's deep. And like you mentioned, Hamantaschen is a nom de plume, so you don't have these German origin, you know, German roots that come from it. The titles are often there isn't a word that actually describes a deep horror that was very nearly awe, you know, or a voice that's still confused but ever becoming louder and clearer. Those are kind of, they deserve, I think, great German words, but or English words or words at all, but their only way to describe them is the description.
Yeah, I stole a horror that was very nearly awe from Stephen King's Pet Sematary. I thought I'd give him a shout out, you know, I thought I'd give him a boost.
Yeah.
Like getting that Hamantaschen connection.
He could always use it, I feel like, you know.
Yeah. So actually, the most recent collection, You Know It's True,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't originally planning on releasing a fourth collection. On the third collection, for people who've read it, it kind of mentions in the beginning how this was going to be my last collection, and it includes my favorite story I've ever written, the last story. I'm trying to remember the title of it. I think it's called I Will Soon Be Home and Never Need Anyone Ever Again. I wrote, you know, I was like, hey, this is, I really like this story a lot. It's going to be my last collection. It's kind of a nice synthesis of the first two. But then I started working on some more stories. And I would say this most recent collection might, I would say in the third collection, some of the stories had a little bit, I wouldn't say optimistic, but some of the stories had a little bit more of like a measured tone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as things started going sideways in an old Hamantaschen lifestyle. So the stories get more and more dark and angry and unpleasant. And I was kind of thinking, like, no one's going to want to read this shit ever. But then actually I showed a bunch of stories to people, and they were like, hey, this is actually better than the other shit you were producing. I'm like, hey, not bad. So I feel like when I released this story, this collection, the response has actually been pretty positive in terms of like, and also in this last collection what I've done is I included afterwards, which I just kind of describe, you know, the origins of the story or how they might, you know, parallel something in my real life or like what inspired it or what I was going for. But which I thought was actually a lot of fun. It seems like people actually appreciated that stuff, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the things that people appreciate about these kind of director's cut specials is specifically that kind of question. And sometimes it's a long answer and sometimes it's pretty short. Like you kind of nailed up and summed up Wonder by that experience in the park in Berkeley. That's neat.
Except the problem when I was doing these afterwards, a lot of them were like, oh yeah, this is when I was really depressed and sad. This is when I was really depressed and sad. This is when I was really depressed and angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just kidding.
So writing is kind of therapy to some people, you know, it's
yeah, it doesn't work like real therapy. It doesn't work, though.
Right.
Because if that was the case, you'd write. And then you'd be like, well, that's gone. That's out of the system.
Mm-hmm.
People wouldn't have motifs if that worked.
You mentioned, too, that you're conscious of listeners or readers' feedback and response to your stories. Is that something that directs your writing, too? Or do you kind of write what you want regardless?
No, I write what I want regardless, but then I hope people like it and email me. Like, mm-hmm. A naive moron as a younger person, when a story would be published in a magazine, I was like, well, here comes the flood of responses from everybody. And then yeah. I'd be like, oh, no one gives a shit at all.
Yeah.
But then once the collections actually started getting, I don't want to say popular, but popular enough that people would read them, mm-hmm. You know, certain podcasts would run them or magazines would promote it. Then I would get a fair amount of emails from people. And so that's quite exciting. And I really enjoy that. You know, I mentioned, you know, if anyone's in New York and they like my books, they want to grab a drink, I'm down for that. And most of them have been pleasant experiences. The only unpleasant ones being when people are like, hey, you want to read all my stories? And I'm like, not really, not particularly.
Oh,
I mean, I will, but come on.
Yeah.
We both know I don't want to do that.
Yeah, there's that line between networking and then pushing it a little bit too hard, you know, and you know, you're just using somebody for promotional reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really mind. I mean, hey, if you want me to hang out, and I'll do whatever the fuck. Well, what do I care? But yeah. I'm mainly just interested in, you know, people liking my stories and talking about whatever. But and also want to be like, there's no promotional pull from me. Like, you're not going to get anything from me. No one gives a shit about I say about anything. So,
yeah,
you know, and if the story's really good, I'm going to get upset that I didn't write it. And,
yeah.
And I'll be jealous. And if the story's really bad, then it's just going to be unpleasant for both of us.
Yeah, especially if you've got that curse power, you know, and you can always turn people's babies into monsters and have them thrown into rivers or whatnot by dock workers. It's dark.
I have to come up with something that different because I'm going to be like, hey, you just ripped off your own story for this punishment. So I got in the real world, I got to mix it up.
It's true. This story, Wonder, got a lot of, not like a ton, because I think a lot of people were kind of just their mouths were hanging open with a deep sense of awe, as you described. But the comments in the forums were people were just delighted by the amount of terror that this story infused in them. They didn't know where it was going or what would happen next or why this was happening to this guy. But you could kind of get this sense early on that this could go anywhere, you know, that this writer's willing to kind of take you places maybe that a lot of other writers would have some restraint with. And I know after the after the baby stuff, when it started getting to the wife, I was like, oh, my God, this is what's going to happen next. And it's great that flash fiction can kind of do that, you know, that you don't always need the longer form to impart that sense of dread. I thought that Barry Northern did an awesome job reading this story, too, from the Cats Macabre podcast. He really nailed that kind of it sounds like the kind of person that that would do something like this. Yeah, a bitter person that you met in the park or something that you called a faggot or something. And then they ruin your lives. You know, he sounds like he's really I wasn't even anticipating the casting to be so perfectly, but he nails the voice of this character, I think, in a way that's really creepy.
Norm, the praise and focus has to be exclusively on me. I'm not sharing praise here.
Yeah, well, you know,
this is my one time to shine.
If you throw Stephen King a bone, I got to do that to other podcasts occasionally too. You know, pay it forward.
That's true.
Cool. Let's jump right into it here. This is we'll continue talking. This is Wonder with J.R. Hamantaschen from Trifecta.
Yeah, I already said all the things I got to say about this story. Jesus, what am I gonna do now?
Fortunately, it's Flash.
We'll work something out.
Right.
Wonder if you'll think of me when whatever lady you marry tells you she's pregnant. But I know that's unlikely. Honestly, you'd have no reason to think of me then, anyway. Your plate will be full with babies' books and doctor's visits and late-night heart-to-hearts with your bros and confidential talks with yourself in the mirror. You'll be doing a lot to change your ways and to prove to everybody, especially your mother-in-law, that your wife didn't put all her chips on a losing horse. You won't think of me.
This music's from, I licensed it from Donnie Darko, because it just seemed like the same kind of mood as your story.
Did you license it or just take it?
I had to license it because it was more than 30 seconds, and it's kind of dipping in and out. Cool. Yeah, that's kind of a thing.
The expression, put all your chips on a losing horse, I remember I thought of that applied to myself. I was like, I don't want my partner to put all her chips on a losing horse, so I used it for the story.
Huh, neat.
She's since gone bankrupt because she put all her chips on a losing horse, literally.
I'll be the furthest thing from your mind. You won't think of me specifically when you change your baby's diaper, wipe your baby's ass, and feel something inside him scratch back. But we'll be connected.
Speak to David
in some
be crying.
Way, then you'll get to
yeah, well,
it's a pretty solid baby.
It's true. I just regretted really big time right here not going back and putting a sound effect of a scratch or something. I don't know why I missed that, but that's typically what I would do. But the silence kind of works too.
And you no doubt will suppress fears of your baby's health by smothering them with comforting reminders of your overactive imagination and the horrors wrought by your unchecked anxieties. The baby books will have taught you well.
That could have been another story collection title, Unchecked Anxieties.
Exactly how you'll cope when you see formless movement pushing against your baby's diapers like a heavy body groping against blinds.
Yeah, someone's really trying to get out this baby's butt.
Words you'll offer to your crying baby boy as you hold his hand, and as earnestly as you can muster, pray to your God, to anybody, for the bleeding and redolent rotting in his mouth to go away.
See, redolent rotting is a bit of a pretentious alliterative phraseology right there, but what are you going to do?
Well, what is that thing called? Thrush? Is that what it's called that babies have with their gums and stuff kind of, not rot, but they're really sore?
I mean, that's basically, the story is really just a metaphor for thrush, really. Yeah. That's what I was going for. If they just went to the pediatrician, it would have all been wrapped up.
That's true, yeah. Please, thrush of the baby butt.
Keep his mouth shut. Just take the package and get rid of it. Don't worry, you have his word. He'll take the unmarked cardboard.
I would say in a lot of my stories, there is a fear of the physical body. As in, I find human bodies to be disgusting.
Yeah, and having to make a body, a little baby body, and seeing it grow and all the different types of weird stuff that comes out, you know, poop-wise, that's always grossed me out a lot. And it does kind of bring it into perspective of, like, how gross and weird bodies are in general.
That is basically how Dijon mustard is made.
You heard it here.
You haven't noticed.
Oh, boy.
Because at least then you'll know loss. You'll know a little bit about pain. And as scared and confused and distraught as you'll be, you'll look into your wife's dinner plate eyes and know you need to stay strong for both of you.
Yeah, the story is pretty good, I gotta say.
It really is. I love this line that comes up where you're staring at her eyes and her face looks like melting.
That's what you'll feel.
Yeah, I really sold this one for cheap. You gotta fucking steal off this story.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I should pay you more in retrospect.
Fury breaks and you command her to open
the fucking door. Heard it here
first. There's that rage. You're finally putting it to good use. And to think you thought it had left you. But we both know that underneath your brashness is gnawing futility, and that's all you'll know when she finally opens the door and lets you in, but turns away from you, too ashamed to let you see her face. But you can see it off the reflection of the mirror. You can't explain it, but her reflection looks too obtuse. It looks like melting.
Just got chill bumps. I love how, like, when you listen to this again, you can kind of, and you know what's happening and why the guy is cursed or whatever. Like, a lot of lines like the misplaced rage, which you thought would have gone away, make a lot more sense in that context, you know?
Yeah.
You realize that this person did yell at him in the park and he thought his rage had gone, but it's still there.
I mean, what could I say? There are no loose ends. It's perfect. Just
note of how long her limbs are and how unstable she seems, how something about her makes you itch and grimace as if you were watching contorting maggots suckling over rotting meat. But somehow, you'll know this is just the natural conclusion to what you set in motion 5 years ago. I pray some dying ember in your brain flares and you somehow think of me. Even when she
this guy did do a good job.
He did. He captured that delight that a bitter person would have, you know.
Hands into your face, like a dog burying a bone in the backyard. And if you don't think of me...
Oh, that was a great line. I love that, by the way. Because if a dog burying in a bone, like, in a backyard is just, like, that's such a horrible way to describe somebody being, like, somebody's face being clawed in by their partner.
I'll let you wonder.
Like, yeah, I was thinking of saying like a burrower in the Star Trek Brood Wars expansion pack, but I thought that was a little too inside baseball.
Yeah, that's what the editing process is for, I suppose.
There you go. Laughing at me,
even though you were calling me a faggot in front of the whole bar. All I did was smile.
Yeah, if you think about it, he's kind of like on the woke vanguard here.
That's
it's
true.
Really before its time. The guy says, drops an F-bomb, and he ends up getting his whole family destroyed.
It's true. Kinda, you know, that's one thing that's horrible about it, too, is that the guy has to... I guess he does get his comeuppance in the end by his, you know, his crab wife or whatever, but the wife didn't do anything. The baby didn't do anything. It's just the destruction of everything around him first is what's really horrible, to have him watch it all happen.
She married the guy.
It's true. She might have been horrified by his behavior in the park or whatever, in the bar.
That's
you know.
True. Yeah.
She might have been the only good thing that was redeeming in his life, for all we know, that could have changed him. And this dude that got yelled at in the bar just ruined it, you know, for him.
But the baby, by existing in his balls, was marinating in his hate and came out. Distilled hatred. I think that's how it works.
It's true. Yeah. Marinating in his balls. It's a great
line. Ironically, in this day and age, the guy recounting and saying the F word himself would have to put a curse on himself because he said a word he can't say. So
it's true.
It's just an endless cycle of curses.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's, and isn't that the case in real life too? You know, like it's the kind of behavior that would get you called out in a bunch of different ways, but also, you know, like if you were to go in the route of what is the bitterness that this person is living with day to day, that they're taking such delight and glee in ruining families, it's certainly not a healthy thing for them. And, you know, one would assume that their future is not going to be too bright either, living with that shadow inside of them of rage.
I think they're going to do pretty well for themselves if they are able to kill people with thoughts.
Well, that's awesome. So we're going to hear more stories by you coming up on the Travelcast. You got your fourth anthology coming out. We're looking forward to having that little plugged on the show so people can hear more of your work coming out. And it's been great times. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Sounds good, man.
Awesome.
All right. Bye.